tonight's speakers. Who is Sophie?
I'm Shelley.
Hi.
I'm Sophie, I'm an addict. I'm trying to censor myself because I'm a bit nervous. Just a bit. I tried to have a really sort of spiritual day so that I could be clear and present for you tonight. It went completely wrong. I ended up running to my kid's school late for her play, her screaming at me all the way home for some reason I don't even know. She just, you know, keeps me in the moment. Can't plan what she's going to be like from minute to minute. And then I was running up and down the road trying to get dog food and this and that. But by the time I got here, I was exhausted. So bear with me. I've got 40 minutes to ramble through this. I just like to start off by saying I believe in Narcotics Anonymous. I believe in the traditions. I believe in the steps, and I believe in all of you. You know, and that is incredible for me, you know, to sort of have faith in something so holy, so completely. It's a powerful thing. So I guess I'm going to start from the beginning. I'm going to try and do it in sections. Experience, strength and hope. 15 minutes on each, I guess, but that's a bit controlling, we'll see. When I think about addiction, well, now I see that it's more than drugs, you know, but I'm going to start, obviously, in the beginning, and quite quickly, addiction turned into drugs, and that's why we're all here, really, in Narcotics Anonymous. I also believe, you know, I've had a long time to think about what it is, it nurture, nature, all that stuff. I think it's both. It doesn't really matter, you know, why, what it is. But, you know, I know when I was a child, I remember feeling very different. And I think the biggest thing was, well, I was a dreamer, you know, a real dreamer. I used to fantasize a lot. I think the biggest thing for me that pinpoints a lot of my addiction is a sense of a low self-worth and a self-hatred that I seem to possess so much more than other people. And this constant negative voice in my head saying, you know, that's not right, you shouldn't say that, you know, oh, you shouldn't say that. And so that ruled me, really, throughout my childhood, and I didn't say things I wanted to say, and, you know, and now since coming into recovery, I've found my voice. Whether it's right or wrong, it's my voice, it's my truth, and that is the most important thing that's the biggest gift, actually, that I've got from recovery, I think, is myself, getting to know myself more, but I'm jumping forward. My parents didn't give me any discipline, so I had no guidelines whatsoever for life. I just completely was left to just figure it out myself. They were slightly hippies, so they thought I would teach myself the boundaries that I needed. You know, that's kind of what I think parents thought in the 60s or 70s. 70s, sorry. I'm not that old. sorry, if you are, that's fine. I'm not. And so me and my sister were sort of left to get on with it, to sort of make with no rules, no guidance, and it was quite scary. I remember it being quite a scary time where I just did kind of whatever I wanted to do. And anyway, my sister was my god. She was everything. Like, she kind of brought me up, really, because she was quite, she was actually my mother figure, I reckon. She was a bit older than me, not much, like 2-3 years. And she was very smart and very organised, and all, you know, she'd make me birthday cakes and stuff. Not that my parents completely left us, but they were just not, anyway, I don't think this is that important, but the point is that I never learnt basic skills like washing up, tidying. I just did not have any of that stuff whatsoever. I've only just had to learn it in recovery. My sister was my hero, you know. I worshipped her. She was so intelligent, she was so brilliant, she had a really, really vast mind. She's not an addict, she suffers from schizophrenia now. She had her first mental breakdown when I was about 15, and my parents didn't cope with that very well, and they left me to look after her, which was tough. So I had my teenage years ripped away from me. I'd already started using drugs. It was a confusing time, because I really enjoyed getting high, and my first drug was puff, and then, you know, alcohol and puff, and then soon after that, acid, which is a weird one for young kids. I think it's, but then since, I think it's quite fitting as well, because our minds are so open, and it's not like, anyway, I'm wondering. But then, you know, acid, I did a lot of acid. Ease, you know, the rave scene, that was incredible. You know, those were good times, I remember those good times. But my sister, we did acid together, and then suddenly she lost her mind. Quite, you know, very, very severely, you know, to the point of rocking back and forth in a room for 2 days with the curtains closed, and I was left to look after her, and that was kind of, that sort of catapulted me into quite heavy using coke, or anything I could get my hands on, really. I think by the time I was 17, I'd done pretty much all the drugs I have now, bar a few. You know, I tried crack, I tried heroin. I just wanted to try it all. I really wanted to do heroin ever since I listened to Nirvana. I wanted to be a junkie. I don't know if anyone relates to that, maybe not. But, you know, I had a fascination with that side of life, you know, and I still do sometimes. I just the depravity and sort of the ultimate lack of responsibility, I think it is, the ultimate sort of fuck you to everything. I don't know what it is, but sometimes I can catch myself glancing over at, you know, someone in a sleeping bag with a dog wrapped up in a sleeping bag, and I just think, I want to go and get in their sleeping bag, and then I think, what the fuck, you know, that's such a weird fantasy, but, I don't know what that is. I mean, I'm quite lucky to have not lost my my house and stuff like that, you know. But at 19, how am I doing? Oh yeah, okay, still on the experience. At 19, I experimented with needles and something I always wanted to do. Took me a couple of years to get there. and I had a stroke. I had quite a severe brain hemorrhage. Ended up in hospital for a month and had to learn how to talk. I had to learn how to walk. I slurred my speech for about 6 months. My face was wonky. It's not a good look when you're 19 and you're trying to, you know, hit on boys, or they're trying to hit on you. I mean, it was really, really terrifying, actually. I laughed about it, and that's all I talked about for years, actually. But I never really got any therapy for it. And until I came into recovery, that is. So that's what happened with my drug use. I can remember saying just before I had the stroke that I don't know what I'd do without drugs. I just don't think I could live. I just didn't think I could live without them. And then that happened, and the doctors and everyone and my mum and saying, you know, you can't use anymore, you know that, don't you? And I was like mortified. I just didn't think I could, and I didn't. Okay, so I came out of hospital and straight away, this is my powerlessness. I just carried on, and worse and more. I didn't touch the pills. I didn't go back onto the uppers. Except I did smoke lots of crack. I kind of thought that was okay. You know, that was the insanity. So then it ended up, you know, heroin and crack, but no needles. You know, I still wanted to use needles, and I ended up, just before I cleaned up, I went to Thailand. My friend paid for me to go to Thailand for New Year, And as soon as I got there, I spent a couple of days with her, and then I fucked off with some drug addicts. on my last day, I came, you know, this guy had some needles, and he was just about to have a hit, and I said, after you, can you do me after you? And he was like, sure. And so he did it himself, and then he died. It's not funny, actually, sorry. But it was fucking higher power stuff, I don't know. But I did bring him back to life about 8 hours later, and he bought me a beer. Really nice of him. And what brought me into the rooms wasn't, you know, I'd had a few more years after my stroke of using, lying in bed after smoking a pipe, praying to God that he wouldn't take me at that moment, and saying, if you don't, you know, the fear of death was so imminent. Every pipe, every single time I used, I thought I was going to die, and yet I still did it every day, every single day, all day long. And I was terrified, and it wasn't that wasn't what made me want to stop. It was actually a few years later, and my God, I haven't even talked about my boyfriends. I think my drug addiction is very in par with relationships. You know, I'd fall in love with this guy. He was a drug dealer. And then I married this guy because he used to get like bottles and bottles of this particular drug that I was very fond of. I mean, you know, it was all. And then I fell in love with a suicidal crack addict, and you know, and I was with him for 2 years, And then I managed to get rid of him, and that sounds harsh, but it was like that, really. And then I'd find someone else. I mean, I could never really fund my own habit, I guess. I never really was very good at that. So So the, what brought me to my knees was not the amount of drugs I was using. By the end of it, I wasn't using very much at all. And I really want to stress that I don't think it's about what you used. What you use, because this is why I really believe this, is because when I was at my lowest, my very lowest, it was on a minuscule amount. It was such a minuscule amount, and it was like a can of whatever nasty beer, some high percentage that you can get from the offie, and it was really just because I was so lonely and so depressed, and it had nothing to do with when I was using it my most, or when I was young and caning it on the pills or whatever, or when I had the most amount of drugs, that was, I was okay. You know, it was when I had nothing, it was when I had not very much at all, and that was when I was in my most desperate and sad and lonely, you know. I was very lonely. I had, you know, my friends weren't too sure about me. I kind of isolated myself to such a degree that I didn't really like anyone or myself. I hated myself, and I hated everyone. And when I went to my first meeting, I felt suddenly opened up by a sense of people smiling at me, and people talking about shoplifting and drugs that I wasn't aware that you could talk about in public, you know, and then people, you know, kept calling me up. I thought they were very weird, calling me up. I remember one girl calling me up, and I always remember that. I think that's really special that she called me up, even though I thought she was fucking nuts. I think that is amazing. She kept calling me up, and I was like, hello? who you don't know me, I don't know you. And she kept calling me up and seeing if I was all right. And you know what? I wasn't ready. I didn't think I was ready to give up. I didn't go to treatment. I spent a year coming to meetings and not getting it. I'm not saying after a year I suddenly got it, but after a year I started getting a few days clean, and then I started getting a few more, and then before I knew it I had 6 months, and next week I'll have 10 years. But you know what, I've got another half an hour to bore the hell out of you, so the story doesn't end there. okay, so it's been a long journey, 10 years, and actually it's as long as I used, kind of, just about, and so I was very young when I came in, and it was hard to hear the similarities, not the differences. I was just listening to the differences for a long time. And it was a real struggle to sort of give myself that loving identification that I'm an addict, you know, that I'm worth more than this, that I'm actually, you know, I could have a life, I could actually be the person that I dreamt of being. You know, that's a really loving act to say that you're an addict, I think. To say, actually, I've got a problem. You know, this isn't right. This is not where I want to be. You know, that is the hardest. I think that's the hardest. That's why the newcomers are the most important person, because that is the hardest step, saying, coming into the rooms, hi, Anthony, and saying, you know, I deserve more than this, because I don't love myself, and I didn't think I did deserve more than that, so maybe that's why I found it so painfully difficult. After being loved by people, they kind of loved me till I started to learn how to love myself. That sounds cheesy, but you know, that's kind of what happened. And people would say, "Yeah, you're doing really well. You know, keep coming back." And simple little things like that. And I sort of thought, "All right, well, I'll come back tomorrow." And I could keep going back. Oh God, I'll come back. Keep going back, okay. And I got a sponsor. And do you know what? I gave up the drugs, but I found other ways. Oh, did I find other ways? I had a real problem with shoplifting. It was a killer. I just couldn't stop doing it, and I wasn't honest about it, because I thought, and it took me out of reality, and it worked. You know what, and sometimes, if it works, you're going to rip the arse out of it, because I really ripped the arse out of that one. I'm going to jump around a bit here. So I met my partner, and I'm still with him today. We've had a daughter who's 7, and I met him, he was a year clean. In the first 6 months or something, which is not advised. And then the first 2 years of our relationship were pretty much hell, because I was so insecure. I don't know how we lasted through the first 2 years. It was like two insane people, you know, completely insane, doing some insane kind of weird dance together. I'd leave his house crying, you know. I'd chuck him out of my flat. I'd run out. Yeah, it would be back and forth insanity, so it's not advised. But, you know, I'm grateful I did it. And another thing I love about this program is that we're all different. We're all so different. And, you know, these are suggestions, and the traditions and the steps, you know, you find your own path, you find your own language, it fits everyone. It is amazing how it fits every single person. And when I work this program, oh wait, I'll get to that bit. Wasn't working my program when I was shoplifting every day, all day long. Had to fire myself. I had a really lovely job in the cinema. I couldn't stop stealing. I could not stop. I had sleepless nights. And my addiction just went haywire. And it was actually, I ended up feeling back in that place of loneliness and despair. And because I was a slave, I'd found something else to enslave me. This was this crime, this thinking that I could get whatever I wanted. I always thought I justified it. There's so many justifications why I did it, and now it turns out that I have a hoarding problem and a house full of shit. Half of it is stolen and I can't let go. But this is the thing, you know, this is the beauty of NA, is that, you know, there's so many layers. And if there weren't, it would be so boring. If you got there, you cleaned up, and suddenly everything's all right, it would just be... I'd leave, actually, because... Or would I leave? I don't know what I'd do, but it wouldn't be fun. You'd leave. You'd leave because there'd be no point in coming back. But anyway... So then I managed to put down the shoplifting. I managed to stop it, and I'm And I'm talking like only like a year or so ago. That's what, 8-9 years of struggle with that one. It was a very, very hard one for me. I've had a few sponsors. I've got an amazing sponsor at the moment. I've had to keep surrendering to this program. You know, I find when I put something down, you know, there's something else there that comes up. Everyone is different. You know, it might be sex, food. That I, you know, everyone's. Very obsessive as well. I've been obsessed with people. I get obsessed with people. Oh my God. That's tough as well. You know, it's all addiction at the end of the day. Whatever takes you out of yourself, whatever takes you out of reality, if it works, you're going to rip the arse out of it. You know, if you're an addict, and in fact, if I didn't think I was an addict when I came in here, I know I'm an addict today. I know I am because of the way I behaved clean. You know, not because of the amount of drugs I took. You know, even though I know, you know, I've done enough. My partner relapsed a couple of years ago, and a lot of people I love dearly have relapsed. I've created a family in here that are stronger to me, you know, closer to me in some ways than my actual family are. I've had an open house at Christmas times. You know, I've had a community that I've always dreamt of, people babysitting my little girl, me babysitting their kids, you know, families coming together, parties. I still party hard. I'll never let go of that one. That's what I can sometimes escape into that one. That's always fun, as long as I don't hang out with too many drugs. I call them drugs, they're people, but when they're on drugs, you know, they become like animals, which I can relate to, but I just don't want to be around it, you know. Okay, where am I at? Okay, oh God, what ages? So yeah, that was very difficult. My boyfriend relapsed it.
Have I got 10 minutes?
Oh my God. Okay, that's even better. I was going to say, okay, so he relapsed. That was hard. I didn't want to join him. You know, he didn't go back to injecting. You know, he was an IV user. He was a street junkie. You know, he could have gone completely. I would have lost him. You know, if he didn't. Just about keep it to. I would have lost him, basically. It was very scary. I thought I was going to lose him. I didn't, you know, he didn't use gear. He used cocodamol and. Which is, you know, there were times when he was just as stoned as he had a hit, you know, and I had to, you know, sit. I was with him, sleeping in the same bed, and he was couching out, and, you know, I love you. You're my soulmate. Oh, fucking hell. So, I was like, you know, there were times where I thought, that looks nice, but really, you know, it's not real. You know, that was the thing, it wasn't real. And then the next day it was like, oh, you know, then maybe that was fake. I mean, it's all kind of fake, and I know it's fake now. It felt good to him, though. You know, he was in pain, and it fixed the pain. And so now he's been on he's been on Subutex for over a year. It's the longest detox known. Well, no, because, like, I'm in a room full of addicts, you know, had like really long detoxes, but, you know, it's a long detox for me. You know. And quickly before I end, I did experience a subtext a few weeks ago. After a year of him being on it, something terrible happened. We've been very careful. You know, I've had to separate myself quite a lot from him, you know, to sort of survive this, go to Al-Anon. I didn't really do that much, but I really stepped up my meetings and, you know, really had to re-surrender. And little did I know that I was going to have to re-surrender all over again, because we snogged, we had a little kiss, like, about 5 weeks ago, and I went to a meeting. On my way to the meeting, I snogged him goodbye, got to the meeting, and I had the Suboxone, Subutex, whatever, in my system, and I was stoned, really stoned. And it was really stoned. I mean, I couldn't hardly open my eyes. So that was scary. And the scariest thing was that when I started coming down, I really wanted more. That was terrifying. And I was gonna have more, you know. And by the grace of God, and then I actually, you know, I mean, two people in this room looked after me all day, two recovering addicts. I didn't go home to my boyfriend. I went straight to one of their houses, and they helped, you know, they made me tea, they looked after me. It was the best day, you know, ever. But then I started coming down, and then I started projectile vomiting, actually. And just, you know, it was very intense, and just that fear of wanting more and wanting to do. And then I got through that day without doing any more, and I woke up the next morning and I was so grateful. I was so grateful that I hadn't done more, and that I wasn't in that place, and that I was in recovery, and that I wasn't going to go back to that. And you know, at the time it was nice, but you know what I knew that if I decided to go back there, I would have lost all of my dreams and all of the things that I aspire. I can my aspirations, my dreams, my hopes, my ambitions. You know, I can see so clearly now, and it's so wonderful to be able to see that, and I'm very privileged. Thank you. That would have gone, and I could see how easy that would have been to just throw it all away. So I've had to come to, I'm doing 90 meetings in 90 days at the moment. I've had to re-surrender, like really re-surrender, and I've realised what that means is I'm on step two. And it feels different. I feel like I'm being the most honest I've ever been in my life, and that's really what it's about. It's like being honest about the little things. Like I lied about shoplifting, you know, a little top or, you know, a pair of shorts or whatever, a chocolate bar, thing, cheese, you know, and it all amounts. It all triggers something and something and something. So I'm being 100% honest. I would like to quickly say as well, I came into the fellowship thinking I was stupid, like really stupid. I'm dyslexic, and you know, I don't spell good. My grammar's shot to pieces. I have a postgraduate diploma which I got in recovery. That's kind of almost like an MA in art. It doesn't mean that it didn't have to spell good or use proper grammar. I still had to write, and you know, I passed. I just want to say that I love being clean, and I love this journey. It is mind blowing, and it's much more exciting than using every day. And you know, I'm so grateful. to be clean. And thank you for listening.
Thanks.